This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You've probably heard of the breast cancer genes BRCA1 and BRCA2, which, when mutated, increase a woman's risk of breast cancer. But now a new study shows just how alarmingly high that risk is. Women who inherit mutated forms of these genes have a lifetime risk of developing breast cancer as high as 80%, 80%. Researchers looking for the genetic cause of cancer came across these genes while looking at women who had breast cancer. But what scientists did not know at the time is that these genes are also at work in ovarian cancer. Women with BRCA1 mutation have a 54% lifetime risk of ovarian cancer. That's nearly 20 times the risk of the general population. Why are these mutations associated with cancer? And what can women do to lower their risk of developing cancer? Should all women be tested for the genes? And then what do you do? Joining me now to talk about that and other recent breast cancer news is Dr. Elizabeth Swisher. She is the Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Director of the Breast and Ovarian Cancer Prevention Program at the University of Washington School of Medicine. She's also a gynecological oncologist with the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, and she joins us from Seattle. Thanks for taking time to be with us, Dr. Swisher.
Thanks for inviting me.
These are alarmingly high numbers, are they not?
Yeah, these are very high numbers.
And let's talk about also that what we hadn't heard before is about the elevated risk for ovarian cancer.
Well, we did know that these genes were associated with ovarian cancer risk. What we didn't really know is how high that risk actually is. Even women who carry mutations in these genes, even that don't have a strong family history of ovarian cancer in their own family, mm-hmm. still have this very high lifetime risk of ovarian cancer, which is a very deadly cancer to get.
And that was 54% for the BRCA1 gene?
Right.
And 23%?
For the BRCA2 gene.
What is the risk of these diseases for women without these genetic mutations, for example?
So in the general, in the general population, it's a little bit less than 2%. So for white women, a little bit lower for non-Caucasian women. So in the United States, the overall risk is about 1 out of 70 for your entire lifetime of getting ovarian cancer.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking with Elizabeth Swisher. But how rare are these forms, I mean, in the general population?
So in the general population, about 1 out of 800 women carry a mutation in BRCA1 or BRCA2. So it's not a prevalent thing in the general population to carry this mutation. But for those women who do carry the mutation, their cancer risk is so high that it's really worth them knowing about it so they can do something to minimize that risk.
And what should they do?
My advice is to see a specialist who is used to working with women with BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations. This is a rapidly evolving field, and the types of prevention that are available are changing. So there are medications that can decrease cancer risk. There are surgeries that can decrease cancer risk. There are new screening technologies that are better than some of the screening technologies that we use in a low-risk person. So all these options need to be considered and tailored to the individual woman.
How do you find out if you have one of these gene mutations?
Well, the first step is to really see if you are at risk. And if there's the best way to do that is to really find out what your family history is. Talk to people in your family, elder relatives. I mean, who has had cancer in your family? If there's a family history of breast cancer or ovarian cancer, particularly that occurs, you know, at a younger age, then talk to your doctor about your family cancer history, and you might be a candidate for genetic testing.
And so if it's on your mother's side or your father's side?
Either one. So women tend to ignore the cancer history on their father's side when they're worrying about female cancers, but it's equally likely to travel through either side of the family.
And how easy is it to get the genetic testing?
Well, the genetic testing is available through one company in the United States. It's very expensive, about $2,800.
Wow.
So for a low-risk person, that's unlikely to carry the mutation. It's not done routinely. Insurance companies will pay for, a number of insurance companies will pay for the genetic testing if you meet their criteria, which means usually having some cancer or personal history of cancer. So the mm-hmm. test is very expensive, and it's not perfect either.
Let's go to the phone. Let's go to Jerry in Reno. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, how you doing?
Fine, go ahead.
My question is about testing. My wife was diagnosed in 1998, and we discussed it then with her doctor. But at that time, it was like, the results, we can't be sure where the results will end up or how they will be used as far as employment, you know, in the future or whatever. So we're concerned about that. So my question is, I just heard about, you know, it's a very one company in the United States will do the testing. Are there any companies offshore? And is there a way to do it anonymously so that it doesn't have a paper trail or can't be followed?
So you don't get insurance later on. People will deny you insurance.
Like they do with HIV testing. Right. You know, is there a way to do that?
Well, there's one company in the United States that has a patent, and so really all clinical testing has to go through that company. It's so expensive that you actually can get it done anonymously if you don't want to bill your insurance.
Right.
But most people would prefer to have their insurance pay for it because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. There's been very little genetic discrimination since this testing has been available, and it really has been more of a theoretical concern than actually has happened. In fact, you know, if you have a cancer history in your family or a personal history of cancer, that, you know, already is information the insurance company uses. Mm-hmm. Life insurance company will use that information to dictate whether or not to give you life insurance. They actually don't ask for any genetic information.
Not yet,
and hopefully not in the future. But, I mean, there are laws to protect, and they vary from state to state. But in general, it really hasn't been nearly as much of a problem as we thought it would be.
Is there a way to contact that company? Do you have any contact information for that one company?
That company, is Myriad Genetics, which is in Salt Lake City. But what I would advise is seeing somebody who specializes in genetics in your area, a medical geneticist or a genetic counselor, because you do need to get appropriate counseling before you decide whether the test is right for you or not.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jerry, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck to you. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Maxine in Boulder. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, go ahead.
My concern, obviously, is very similar to the recent callers, which is, you know, I'm Ashkenazic Jewish, so I know that supposedly gives me predisposition. I'm 42, I still want to get pregnant, and my grandmother and one of her sisters had breast cancer. And so, you know, I hear you saying, well, you need to go talk to a geneticist and be counseled and stuff, but, you know, it's pretty frightening to be hearing this kind of information, and I'm just wondering, you know, what should people do? I mean, what should be the response to this data that we're now being presented with?
Dr. Swisher?
Well, so you're right, Maxine. In Ashkenazi Jewish population, the frequency of mutation carriers is much higher. So 2% of Ashkenazi Jewish women or men will carry a mutation in the BRCA1 or 2 gene. Most of these mutations are actually some ancient common mutations, one of three, and it's cheaper to test for those. So in some ways, it's actually easier to get some of that genetic information in the Ashkenazi Jewish population. I would, if you have a family history of cancer and you're Ashkenazi Jewish, it would increase your chance of carrying a mutation. And it is worth knowing about because there really are preventive measures that can be taken.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what they are.
Such as, we tailor it to an individual. So you said that, you're still going to have children. At this point, then, you know, removing the ovaries is not an option, but that is one way to decrease the ovarian cancer risk once somebody has completed childbearing. There's screening for breast cancer, such as mammography. There's also some newer technology, such as breast MRI, that can be used in certain women that have a high risk of cancer like this. There are clinical trials looking at medications to prevent or decrease the future risk of breast cancer.
But what about the recent controversy about the effectiveness of mammographies? I mean, I had a baseline, and now I'm supposed to go back and have another one. And, I feel really like there's so much information out there that's so confusing. How do you sort through that to decide what you need to do?
So that's why I think if you really have a family history or a concern about this, that you should start, the first thing you need to do is start with risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
How high risk are you before you decide what to do about that risk? And that really has to be done by a specialist who has expertise in this area of cancer genetics. It's not something to just go to your generalist and have the test and not be sure how to interpret it.
How do you find these people, these specialists?
Yeah, there's cancer genetics specialists in like most major cities, and there's genetic counselors all over the country. So if you talk to your primary physician, they will be able to tell you who's a genetic specialist in your area.
All right, thanks for calling. Good luck, Maxine.
Thank you.
And some women are having their breasts removed. Are they not, as preventive?
Yeah, so if your lifetime risk of breast cancer is as high as 80%, some people will elect to undergo preventive surgery. In this country, that's still the minority of women, even that have these mutations. It's less than 20% of women who are electing to have that preventive surgery. So it's certainly not, even though it's a very effective means of decreasing breast cancer risk, it's not necessarily the most common method that women are using.
Let me see if I can, before we run out of time, ask you one more question, because last week there was an announcement that researchers were halting clinical trials for a new breast cancer drug called Femara, because it was so successful, and the drug lowered the risk of cancer by 43%. Can you tell us anything about that drug?
Yeah, so that's a drug that inhibits or stops a part of the estrogen pathway where your own body makes estrogens. And so you're exposed to a lower level of estrogens because the natural estrogens that your body are making from other chemicals is being halted. And that is was shown to be effective for women who had already had breast cancer at preventing recurrence, so effective that they stopped the trial to allow all women to have it.
Does that mean we should expect to see it as a drug soon, available
to
everyone?
Well, yeah, it is a drug that's already available, and so I think it will be used more and more for women who have had breast cancer. There's also some clinical trials that are in place and beginning to look at it in women who haven't had breast cancer as just a prevention drug and not just for preventing recurrence of people who've already had cancer.
We do so many programs on every time there's another update on breast cancer, we talk about it. It seems like one of our callers was saying things get more and more confusing instead of easier.
Yeah, they do get more and more confusing, and all I can say about that is that talk to somebody who has a special interest in this area. Even people that take care of some people with breast cancer may not be particularly interested in the genetics or the high risk component of it. So finding somebody who knows something about that will really be in your benefit if you're worried about that.
Do you think in the long run it's going to be cheaper to treat women if they're fine by health care preventively than wait till they get the cancer, so they might fund more of these preventive studies?
Absolutely. Clinical trials and prevention are expensive to perform, but really it's the future of cancer is probably in prevention.
And where do you go from here with your studies?
Well, we really want to look at how, what factors modify that risk. So, without having to have your breasts removed, how can we really minimize breast cancer in women who have a very high risk? And why do some women get breast cancer in the family at 30 and other women get it at 70 with this, in the same family? If we could know, how to predict risk better for an individual.
And there are women who get cancer who don't have the modified gene. Correct?
Right. And so we need to learn about other factors, both genetic and environmental, that influence breast cancer risk and other cancer risk for people in the general population.
So it's still pretty much a mystery here.
Science is always a mystery.
Yeah.
That's what keeps it exciting.
Keeps it exciting and keeps you busy. All right, Dr. Swisher, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Elizabeth Swisher is Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Director of the Breast and Ovarian Cancer Prevention Program at the University of Washington School of Medicine. She is also a gynecological oncologist with the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Ira.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about separating conjoined twins. Two of the physicians working on a special case here in New York are with us. They'll answer your questions about how they're doing it, so stay with us. Check over to our website now. You can go to that section of Science Friday, Hour 1, and you'll see pictures of some of the casts that were made that they'll be using in this set of operations, and we'll be talking about those. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.